Welcome to the deep dive. Today our mission is to completely demystify a really crucial concept in real estate investing, which is rental yield.
Yeah, it's such a foundational topic.
It really is. And we are pulling from this really expensive, highly detailed investor guide today. It breaks down property performance, the math behind yield, and the rapidly growing space of fractional ownership, too.
Right, which is a fascinating area right now.
Oh, absolutely. So, whether you are actively trying to build long-term wealth, or maybe you're looking to evaluate a potential real estate opportunity right now, or maybe you just want to understand the objective, cold, hard math that wealthy investors use to make decisions, this deep dive is going to give you a really powerful new mental model.
I think it forces a fundamental shift in perspective, honestly. You stop asking, like, does this look like a good property? And you start asking, how effectively does this capital generate cash?
Yes, exactly. And to understand why that shift is so necessary, I mean, just imagine you are walking into an open house, you step through the front door, and immediately you're hit with that fresh paint smell.
Oh, yeah, the staging is always perfect.
Right. You see these gorgeous, gleaming marble countertops. The natural light is hitting the hardwood floors just perfectly. And, your heart rate actually goes up a little bit. Your gut just screams, "This is it. This is a fantastic investment."
But here is the hard truth about building long-term wealth. Countertops do not pay the bills.
They really don't. And relying on that emotional gut feeling is exactly how people end up losing massive amounts of money.
Yeah, because the aesthetics of a property are incredibly seductive.
Yeah.
But a visually stunning floor plan tells you absolutely nothing about the operational reality of that asset. It just masks the financial mechanics.
Which brings us to our major hook for today. While understanding rental yield is the ultimate shortcut to evaluating a property's efficiency, relying on it too much, like looking at it in total isolation, is actually the number one mistake that inexperienced investors make.
It's a huge trap.
It is. So, to understand why seasoned investors obsess over this metric without falling into that trap, we first have to understand what it actually measures, and more importantly, how the math can completely hide the true story if you aren't careful.
Right.
So let's start with the baseline. The guide defines rental yield as the measure of how much income a property generates relative to its overall value. It simply asks, how much income is this producing compared to what it's worth?
Because real estate investing is generally a balancing act between two distinct objectives, right? You have generating immediate cash flow and then building long-term wealth through capital appreciation.
Yeah, the short term versus the long term.
Exactly. And rental yield is laser-focused on that first objective. It measures the velocity of your money today.
Okay, let's unpack this. The guide points out that there are two different ways to calculate this number, and blurring the lines between them is really where the danger starts. You have gross rental yield and net rental yield.
Two very different things.
Very different. Gross yield looks at the rental income before any expenses are considered at all. It's a quick, back-of-the-napkin way to do an initial comparison.
Right, just a rough estimate.
Yeah. But net yield takes into account the actual unavoidable expenses, maintenance, property management fees, insurance, local service charges, and all those quiet operating costs that just eat away at revenue.
The silent killers of cash flow.
Exactly. To me, gross yield is like your gross salary. It's the big, impressive, inflated number you brag to your friends about. But net yield, that
Yeah.
is your actual take-home pay after taxes, health insurance, and retirement contributions are deducted.
That's a great way to put it.
Right. It's the money you actually get to live on.
What's fascinating here is that the illusion of profitability lives in the gross yield, but the absolute truth of the investment lives in the net yield.
Oh, I like that. The absolute truth.
Yeah, because a property might boast an 8% gross yield on paper, looking like a gold mine. But if that building is aging and requires specialized upkeep, or say, the municipal service charges in that specific district are exceptionally high,
Which happens all the time.
all the time, your actual take-home cash, your net yield, could plummet to 2%. Net yield strips away the marketing spin and forces you to confront the operational reality.
And because it forces that confrontation, net yield provides investors with the exact tool needed to solve that open house problem we just talked about, emotional investing. It introduces pure, undeniable objectivity.
Yeah, because when analyzing multiple opportunities simultaneously, cognitive overload is a real threat.
Oh, for sure. You get decision fatigue.
Exactly. You might be looking at two properties in entirely different cities. They might have the exact same price tag. Without a metric like yield, you are essentially guessing which one performs better based on, like, subjective feelings about a neighborhood's vibe.
Right, like, oh, this street has a cute coffee shop.
Yeah, which doesn't mean it's a good investment. Yield provides a standardized mathematical framework. You can place two wildly different assets side by side and objectively measure their income engine.
But wait, I want to push back on that framework for a second.
Sure.
Let's say we have two properties that cost exactly the same amount of money, say $500,000 each. Shouldn't they automatically yield the same baseline income? I mean, why would the real estate market price them identically if one of them is a significantly worse cash generator?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to recognize that real estate markets price in emotion, prestige, and future assumptions, not just current cash flow.
Okay, so it's not a perfectly rational machine.
Not at all. One property might command a $500,000 price tag because it's a beautiful single-family home in an established, highly desirable school district.
Got it. So the buyer is paying a premium for prestige.
Exactly. They are paying for prestige and the expectation that the land value will appreciate steadily over the next decade. Because the purchase price is inflated by those factors, the actual rental income it generates is quite low relative to the cost.
Ah, so the market is pricing in the story of the property and the future growth rather than the money it spits out today.
Right. And then the alternative $500,000 property could be a triplex in a purely working class industrial adjacent neighborhood.
So totally different vibe. Zero architectural charm.
Yeah, absolutely zero charm. And the long-term appreciation of that land might be virtually flat. But because it houses three distinct tenants consistently paying rent, the immediate cash it generates is massive.
So the price tags are identical, but their functions as financial instruments are completely different.
Precisely. Yield acts as a reality check against the narratives baked into the purchase price.
That makes a lot of sense. So knowing that two identically priced properties can have wildly different yields based on their function, we have to look at the underlying variables pulling the levers on that income potential.
Right. The hidden gears turning behind the scenes.
Yeah. And reading through the guide, there is a stark difference in how yield behaves depend on the property type itself. Specifically, when we look at residential spaces versus commercial spaces.
The lease structures fundamentally alter the net yield calculation here.
How so?
Well, with residential properties, the landlord is typically responsible for almost all the operating expenses. Property taxes, structural insurance, exterior maintenance. Those costs drag the net yield down.
Right, because the landlord writes those checks.
Yeah. But in the commercial space, you often encounter something called a triple net lease.
Right, where the tenant takes on the heavy lifting.
Exactly. In a triple net lease, the commercial tenant, say, a retail store or a corporate office, agrees to pay the property taxes, the building insurance, and the maintenance costs, in addition to their base rent.
Wow. So they just cover practically everything.
Yeah. So because the tenant absorbs those major expenses, the landlord's net yield on a commercial property is often significantly higher and much more predictable than residential.
But that higher commercial yield only holds up if the local economy can support the businesses renting those spaces, right? Which brings up the macroeconomic variables.
Definitely.
Because the guide digs deeply into how market conditions and supply dynamics secretly manipulate yield. I mean, you can have a flawlessly managed building, but if developers just drop 10,000 new apartment units into your city within a 12-month window, your yield is in trouble.
Oh, absolutely. A massive influx of supply creates a tenant's market. And this is really where novice investors miscalculate their gross yield.
Because they assume rent will just stay the same.
Exactly. In an oversupplied market, landlords aren't just competing on the monthly rental price. They have to offer concessions to attract tenants.
No, like offering the first month free?
Right. They offer the first month free, or they cover moving costs, or maybe throw in free parking for a year.
And those concessions secretly annihilate the math. I mean, if you calculate your yield assuming 12 months of rent, but you had to give away 1 month for free just to get the tenant to sign the lease, your actual gross revenue for the year just dropped by over 8% before you even paid a single maintenance bill.
Exactly. The ripple effects of those market conditions tie directly into the operational side of the house. This is where property management becomes the defensive line for your yield.
Which is interesting because many passive investors assume property management is just a necessary administrative fee for collecting checks and fixing a leaky faucet.
Yeah, they treat it like an afterthought.
I used to think the exact same thing. But the guide highlights a much more sophisticated drain on net yield, and that's tenant turnover costs.
It is huge.
Yeah, it's not about the occasional plumbing bill. When poor management causes a tenant to leave out of frustration, the financial hit is staggering.
It really is.
You have the lost income for the months the unit sits vacant. You have the marketing costs to find a new tenant. You have the deep cleaning and painting costs to turn the unit over. And then you have the leasing agent commissions.
It adds up so fast. A single unnecessary tenant turnover can wipe out an entire year of positive cash flow.
Wow.
Yeah, a highly efficient property management team focuses on tenant retention, precisely to avoid those turnover costs. They preserve the net yield by ensuring the revenue stream remains uninterrupted.
So a brilliant location in a booming economic market means nothing if your management team is bleeding cash through constant tenant churn.
Spot on.
Now, understanding how all these variables like lease structures, supply-driven concessions, and turnover costs, how they manipulate the math, it leads to a very natural but dangerous conclusion.
Uh-oh.
Right, because I might think, if I know how to calculate a true net yield and I know how to find the property spitting out the absolute highest number, I should just throw all my money at that property, right? And this is the trap.
It is the ultimate trap of exclusivity. High yield is incredibly seductive on a spreadsheet. But a high yield does not automatically equal a superior investment.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, it often indicates the exact opposite. You must evaluate the risk profile.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Chasing the highest rental yield without looking at the underlying risk is exactly like buying a dirt cheap, heavily used luxury car.
Oh, I love this analogy.
Right. So you see this high-end vehicle listed online for a fraction of what it should cost, and the upfront deal looks amazing. You think you've outsmarted the entire market, but the reality is you're buying someone else's catastrophic underlying problems.
But the transmission is just hanging on by a thread.
Exactly. In real estate, a staggering yield usually exists because the purchase price has plummeted compared to the historical rent. And why did the price plummet? Because institutional investors see massive risk on the horizon.
Yeah, markets are generally efficient at pricing in uncertainty. You might find a multifamily property with a 14% net yield.
Which sounds amazing.
It does. But upon closer inspection, you realize the local economy relies entirely on a single manufacturing plant. If that plant downsizes or relocates, your tenant pool vanishes overnight, and that 14% yield drops to zero.
Wow. So the yield is artificially high today precisely to compensate the buyer for taking on that massive looming risk.
Yes. And we also have to consider the long game, capital appreciation. The guide notes that a property with a very moderate, almost boring yield might actually be the crown jewel of a portfolio.
How does that work?
Well, this circles back to balancing income against long-term wealth building. A property might generate a modest net yield today, but if it sits in an area slated for transformational growth...
Like a new train station being built.
Exactly. Perhaps the city is extending a major transit line to the neighborhood, or a global tech company is anchoring a new campus nearby. The underlying value of that asset will skyrocket. The future appreciation of the property will vastly outperform the immediate cash flow.
So if you only chase the highest current yield, you will inherently end up with properties in stagnant or declining areas where the overall asset value will never grow.
Right.
Okay, so the percentage point on the spreadsheet is really just a symptom of the broader economic story. Understanding why a property generates a specific yield is arguably more important than the number itself.
I would agree with that.
And that means aligning the metric with your actual strategy. I mean, if you are retiring tomorrow and need immediate cash to pay for groceries, you might tolerate a higher risk profile to capture a higher yield.
Sure.
But if you have a 20-year time horizon, taking a low yield today for explosive capital growth tomorrow makes total sense.
Exactly. Rental yield must always be contextualized within your personal financial architecture. It is a diagnostic tool, not an absolute mandate.
Now, everything we've explored so far feels highly applicable to the traditional investor, right? Someone securing a mortgage and buying a physical building all by themselves.
Traditional real estate, yeah.
But the necessity of scrutinizing net yield and balancing risk applies identically to the modern, hyper-accessible structures transforming the market right now. The source material spends significant time examining fractional property ownership.
It's a massive trend.
It really is, particularly noting its explosive attention and development in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, fractional ownership is democratizing commercial and high-end residential real estate. Instead of requiring millions in liquid capital to acquire an asset, The equity is divided into micro-shares among hundreds or thousands of investors.
But the underlying physics of the real estate remain entirely unchanged, right?
Completely unchanged. The physical building still requires maintenance, it still experiences turnover, and it still collects rent.
The guide specifically mentions a platform called Osul Gamma, which is focusing heavily on educating investors on how to navigate this exact space. They are building frameworks so users can evaluate these fractional opportunities using the same rigorous metrics like yield and performance that institutional funds use.
That level of education is so important in this new space.
And it notes that Osul Gamma's fractional ownership offering is actively being tested within REGIA's regulatory sandbox.
Wow, the inclusion in a regulatory sandbox is a critical detail.
Can you explain what that is for people who might not know?
Sure. A sandbox is a controlled, heavily monitored testing environment established by financial regulators. In this case, Saudi Arabia's Real Estate General Authority.
So it's like a safety net for innovation?
Basically, yeah. It allows innovative fintech platforms to test their fractional ownership models with real market data and real users, while the regulator ensures consumer protections and compliance frameworks are airtight before granting full, widespread market authorization.
So what does this all mean for the math? When you chop a commercial asset into fractions and route the ownership through a tech platform operating under these regulatory frameworks, does the calculation of gross and net yield change? Or does the nature of shared ownership introduce a whole new layer of invisible expenses we have to hunt for?
This raises an important question about the operational architecture of fractional platforms. The core mathematical formula income minus expenses divided by value is immutable.
Okay, so the math stays the math.
Yes. However, the fractional structure demands even greater scrutiny of the net yield because the investor relinquishes all operational control.
Oh, right, because you aren't the one calling the plumber anymore.
Exactly. When you buy a fraction of a property, you are placing absolute trust in the platform and their designated management partners to optimize that asset.
Which means they're the ones dealing with the tenant turnover costs and the triple net lease negotiations.
Exactly. And you have to evaluate how they handle the reserve funds, too.
Reserve funds?
Yeah. A responsible fractional platform will withhold a percentage of the gross rental income to build a cash reserve for future roof repairs or structural maintenance.
Mm.
Furthermore, the platform itself charges management fees, asset structuring fees, and technology fees.
Okay, that makes sense.
Every single one of those line items must be deducted from the gross rent before your fractional share of the net yield is distributed to your digital wallet.
So if you are browsing an app looking at a fractional warehouse and a fractional apartment building, the only way to genuinely compare them is by stripping away the projected gross numbers and demanding to see the true post-fee net yield.
Without the net yield, you are flying blind. It is the great equalizer across different asset classes, different property types, and different fractional platforms.
It all connects back to the foundation. Whether you are buying a duplex by yourself or acquiring a fraction of a commercial high-rise through your smartphone, the math remains your ultimate defense mechanism.
It really does.
So, to recap our deep dive today, rental yield is the essential tool for measuring how efficiently your capital is working. It cures emotional investing by introducing pure objectivity.
Right.
But it is only one part of the equation. You must prioritize net yield over gross yield to uncover hidden operational costs. You have to understand how market supply and tenant turnover actually manipulate the cash flow.
Vital steps.
And above all, you must avoid the trap of blindly chasing high yields without diagnosing the underlying risk or sacrificing long-term capital appreciation.
Yield is a brilliant instrument, but only when utilized within a comprehensive evaluation of the total asset.
Well said.
And, you know, considering the rise of the fractional platforms we just discussed, there is a fascinating shift in market psychology on the horizon.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, if platforms like Osul Gamma succeed in making it incredibly easy for everyday people to instantly compare the true net yields of various commercial and residential properties side by side, we are going to see a massive influx of hyper-objective, data-driven retail investors.
Oh, wow. Investors who refuse to look at anything but the cold, hard numbers.
Precisely. And if this new, massive buyer pool simply refuses to overpay for a pretty house with terrible financial math, it could eventually force traditional, emotion-driven landlords and developers to completely change how they price, build, and manage their properties.
That's a huge ripple effect.
The days of hiding poor operational performance behind a fresh coat of paint might be numbered. When transparency increases at scale, the entire market has to adapt.
That is an incredible thought to leave on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep trusting the math, keep looking for the net over the gross, and remember to keep questioning the numbers behind the investments you see in the world. Next time you walk into that open house and your heart skips a beat over those gleaming marble countertops, just remember to ask for the spreadsheet.